The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I can't wait for this one because this is really different. This one is far more about the interesting. It is about wine, just not more in a roundabout way. Writer for the Toronto Star, Mitch Potter. Mitch, thank you so much for joining the pod.
Really glad to be here, Matt.
Yeah, there was, and by the way, I'm going to say this a couple times off the top and at the end. Buy newspapers. You can read them online, but the tactile feel isn't the same. You don't get a sense of what the full story is unless you know, where is it on the page? How big is the font? Is there a picture? Where is everything centered? There is another language. There's a story being told of everything about the story, even before you read it, about its placement.
Delighted to hear you say that.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to tell, as you ask me about the work we do, and I'm probably going to plead for 30 seconds at the end to explain why it's good to... But let's talk about the work first.
Yeah, let's start with the work. And the reason why I got in touch with you is right before the end of the year, there was all these stories started coming out about thefts at the LCBO. Brazen thefts. People just walking in and loading up a knapsack with expensive, mostly spirits. So this one's got very little to do with wine. We'll find a way to get wine talk in. But going in, taking all the high-level cognac, vodka, whatever, and just walking out of the LCBO. And what started to shock people was the frequency and the brazenness that was going on.
Right. And so the genesis for this story, and we've done four pieces now in this series. It's lit up our website like a Christmas tree. We've had all kinds of reader response. This has gripped Ontarians because so many people have seen what I saw, which is how this story started for us.
Yeah.
I happened to be on a Saturday at a birthday event coming up. I went to our local LCBO on the Danforth at Vic Park. And whilst there... everybody, it was a Saturday afternoon, broad daylight.
Yeah, it's not late at night.
No.
It's not some crime caper where they're breaking in like it's Ocean's 11.
No, like me, it was a peak time. People were, you know, it was a crowded LCBO and everybody just froze. The ones who hadn't yet noticed what was going on, which, you know, observant reporter, I was among them. I hadn't noticed these two guys with four backpacks.
Really?
Were filling the backpacks, and they dropped a bottle, and it shattered, and so that crystallized everyone else's attention. We spun around. One of them, you know, brazenly shouted, "Stay the F away from me." You know, everybody just kind of froze in place, and they did their thing. They stripped the vodka shelves bare, the Grey Goose, everything, filled four huge backpacks, and bundled up and announced that they were walking out, and literally... At arm's length, I could have touched both these guys. And
really?
So the first one went by. They were slight men in their early 20s. And it seemed to me that they were burdened nearly by their body weight in vodka.
They're like Sherpas helping people climb up Machu Picchu.
Right. So they did not run away. They could barely walk. And it occurred to me, you know, the slightest little nudge, a few kilos pressure with an open palm on the shoulder of the first guy, and he would have gone over like a tree. He would have gone flat. I could have done a citizen's intervention, and it flashed in my mind, like everyone else in the place, outraged at what we were seeing. But there were two of them, and the next thought raced into my mind, what is this place if not, you know, 4,000 potential weapons, every piece of glass, you know, and there's already broken glass on the floor. What am I thinking that I would intervene with two potentially unstable characters?
And there's also a little bit of shock. That's not what you expect. That's not where mentally or emotionally you expect to encounter such a thing.
No, that was the dominant feeling. And so they did trudge out of the place. There was a fundraising swim team at the door that I chatted with after, and they were amazed that these guys did not run away. They kind of, you know, trudged away with this booty onto the Danforth and turned the corner. So as I was checking out with my rightful purchase, paying for it, I said to the clerk, have you ever seen anything like this before? And he said, every day, sometimes twice a day, just at that location.
And that's the part of the story that shocked me. And the one stat was, according to police, more than 9,000 shoplifting incidents that have been reported over the last 4.5 years. And that's the ones reported. But for this, for the person working the cash to say that this is normal, that's, I think, what got a lot of people's attention when they first heard that story.
Right. So what the dynamic is, and when I got back to work and told my colleagues about it, we had had a letter to the editor, anonymous letter to the editor from an LCBO frontline worker pleading for help, explaining that Ontarians have no idea how bad this is. Mm-hmm. We have people threatening us with dirty needles. We have had knives brandished at us. We are instructed to not intervene. In fact, we are penalized if we do intervene. They get docked pay. And let's back up for a second here. If you sign up as a floor worker at the LCBO, nobody expects your job is to tackle and intervene. I mean, there that's a security job.
That is security.
Or a police job.
Yeah, that is not part of your resume. And also considering, you know, the LCBO will always brag about what their profits are when, good on you, you're selling the easiest thing on the planet and you've got a monopoly. You know, that's a pretty easy thing. So those sort of profits, and you don't have security at every LCBO.
Well, and the thing is this, you're right. In addition to taxes, the LCBO now is at the point, and it's incrementally growing year over year, they're turning over $2 billion to the Ontario government in profit above and beyond taxes annually, which is great. It helped pay for my mom's cancer surgery. Mm-hmm. It helped pay for my dad's quadruple bypass.
Yep.
It'll look after me when I get to the age where I need that kind of medical care. It helps, and I don't have an issue with that. But when the staff is actually pleading with the media for help because they feel unsafe, you know, there's a phrase we use in the 21st century called precarious work. And that is usually about the gig economy, that, mm-hmm. you know, full-time stable jobs with benefits are vanishing, and these mini contracts that millennials are bouncing, that's precarious work. But when we started drilling down into the story, what's more precarious than feeling riddled with anxiety as you go into your shift at the LCBO, not knowing if tonight's the night that somebody sticks a dirty needle in your face?
Yeah. I want to talk about a tweet you sent on January 7th about an LCBO gag order. But before that, I want to still go back a little bit about anything more you can tell us about the anonymous letter or letters from frontline LCBO workers, or just some of the other tales that were delivered to the Toronto Star about these sorts of incidents at LCBOs.
Right. So it reinforced that we were onto the story we were onto when our first story, we chose the lowest news weekend of the year, but the highest alcohol sale weekend of the year.
December the
28th. It was the Saturday of New Year's to launch this story. And it awakened more than 30 LCBO insiders now we're in contact with. They've come to us. They've created anonymous email addresses. They're
Why
reaching
anonymous?
Out. Because they're all terrified of retribution. They feel there's a witch hunt going on for the original leaker. I won't not tell you what part of Ontario the original leaker is from.
Yep.
But I've been told by many Toronto-based LCBO workers that management believes that leak came out of Toronto, and it didn't.
All right, I got to interrupt for a second here.
Yeah.
What is the work environment when workers are afraid that they're going to get punished for being honest about their safety concerns? Shouldn't it not be, oh, we're worried we're going to get in trouble? Shouldn't it be that the powers that be of this very wealthy institution will take the necessary steps?
Right. And what we want is...
I don't mean to be Pollyannish about it, but, you know, this just seems odd.
I think it's managerial instinct, you know, and quite frankly, having worked for a number of large news organizations, I don't think any senior manager wants the internal laundry aired.
Mm-hmm, okay.
But I think the fair trade-off is that we all kind of strive for transparency to show our work. And in the case of a monopoly owned by you and I think there's an obligation for transparency, and it's not what we're encountering when we as journalists reach out to the LCBO.
Yeah.
When the LCBO has an excellent story to tell, and they've had some very good stories to tell. I mean, there's a wine boutique in Woodbridge that I think has over 900 different products from Italy. You know, they've made strides in a number of directions.
Yeah. The Spain wine in Royal York and Bluer.
Right.
What, you know, all the French wines you can get at Summerhill. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And when that's the story, the CEO is on camera, loves the camera.
Yeah.
But when the story is this, we've asked multiple times for interviews with senior management. And it's gotten to the point where we don't even get responses to the request anymore. It's just been no, no, no. When we get any kind of statement, and it's been very difficult to get any kind of information from the LCBO, it's attributable only to the LCBO spokesperson. We can't even name the spokesperson is their approach. And maybe that's 21st century corporate communications.
It seems like lousy leadership.
It saddens me, and you know, so renew the invitation here. We want to do, in good faith, an interview with the CEO of the LCBO, and I think it's the right thing to do. We are co-owners. We are all owners of this enterprise.
Yeah. What are some of the other stories?
Well, you know, what we're finding out now is that more recently, particularly in the summer of this past summer, 2018, thieves became more brazen and more organized, and they started bypassing the shelves altogether and going straight into the warehousing areas of LCBOs.
So into the back rooms.
Right.
That's even scarier because you're a little bit away from the public eye. So if you're an employee stalking Bacardi and suddenly... You know,
and there are no cameras back there. The one thing the LCBO does well is there's security cameras. The LCBO that I witnessed the theft at had 13 cameras mounted to the ceiling, but they don't have them in the supply rooms, and they don't have them in the employee break room. So if you're that employee who has a 15-minute break,
yeah,
you're suddenly going into an area that is no longer inviolate. So there were a rash of thefts in the summer of 2018 that involved teams of thieves targeting and grabbing entire cases of premium product still in the case and either slipping out a back door or walking out the front brazenly, knowing that there would be no consequences.
The one thing I worry about, and I don't know if you can tell me if this has been reported, is more rural areas. Because rural areas, oftentimes, there's just one employee on their own. And, you know, especially, you know, there might not be anyone around, you know, 500 feet of the LCBO. That's the one that's one of the ones that makes me nervous.
Yeah, I it is an issue. And when we had all this outreach from across Ontario, bear in mind the data we have evidence for, that's real hard numbers. You said the police produced this number. They didn't produce anything in point of fact. What we did was we used access to information laws on behalf of the public of Ontario.
Yeah.
The LCBO was not telling us. The police weren't voluntarily giving us theft data on LCBOs. So we used the law to get raw data, which we then crunched. What it gives you is addresses of where theft took place.
Yep. And what sort of...
And so there are over 100 LCBO outlets in Toronto. This is Toronto police data. We had plugged in all the addresses of the LCBOs to actually tease out the data, mm-hmm. to find out that since 2014, there were over 9,000 thefts from LCBOs in Ontario and in Toronto, rather. And then breaking that data down on a year-by-year basis, we were able to track a more than threefold increase over that span. So it increased over 300% in the frequency of theft incidents at LCBOs in Toronto in a 5-year span. It tripled, more than tripled.
The only, and I'd love to know your, if you have any theories as to why it went up. The only thing I can think of is, do you remember the old like Head and Shoulders shampoo commercials where it's one person, they're using it, and then I love this product, and I told my friends, and my friends told their friends, and their friends told their friends. I wonder if it just sort of new spread among the, I don't want to say underworld, that's hyperbolic, but just one criminal who robbed an LCBO said, this is super easy, and then sort of word spread. I wonder if that's
what that's exactly it. And the head of the Toronto Police Association, McCormick, we spoke to him, and he said it's sort of the law of unintended consequences, sort of the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
We found out that very quietly last March, almost a year ago now, the Toronto police sent a letter to the LCBO saying, unless the perpetrators are in the store, don't call 911.
Really?
Yeah, because we're not going to come if they're in the store. But all these things take place in about a minute and a half. People run in, fill a hockey bag full of this stuff, and they're out. And they know that as soon as they're out, nothing's going to happen to them in the store, because even if there's security, they're instructed not to physically intervene.
Wait, security?
Yeah.
So wait, security, what's security there for?
If there's one security guard, we're told that they're there to protect the staff.
Okay.
If there's more than one security guard, that's a little different. The second guard may pursue and see if they put the stuff in a car and they take the license plate down,
but still not physical engagement.
Very, very rare. Right.
Okay. I didn't know that. Because I noticed after the piece, I started, because this is not going to shock you, I go to the LCBO on a pretty regular basis, and a variety of different ones throughout the city of Toronto. I started noticing, oh, more security. I'm like, oh, okay, well, this should thwart theft, but I mean, I guess it probably does a little bit just for the visual, but
right.
I'm shocked. I didn't know that they couldn't physically engage.
How often have you seen more than one security guard at an LCBO?
Yeah, it's once or twice, weekend.
Right.
The Queen's Quay one, which is giant.
Which, as my understanding is, the Queen's Quay one has now usurped Summerhill as the most successful, best-selling LCBO in Ontario.
Yeah.
It's the top seller. And it is huge, and I work right beside it, so it's the one I know the best. And you sometimes see paid duty police. Now, we're getting, since these stories ran and in the last 2 weeks, it's a bit confusing. We're getting all kinds of reports from all kinds of sources telling us that they're seeing more police and they're seeing more security. And we believe, it's a phrase in our office, the Star gets action, the Toronto Star gets action. We believe that there's been some traction because of the public blowback from these stories.
Yeah.
And because we're not the first reporters to try and get at this. It's sort of been a poorly kept secret. People have known about a worsening LCBO theft because, like the time I saw it, there's 20, 30 witnesses every time, right?
And that's going to get out there.
And so people tell each other what they saw and how outraged they were. And that's, we awaken this kind of rage that was pre-existing amongst Ontario purchasers because so many had seen it. So we had all this outreach, but of confirmation that they saw the same thing. But at the same time, if the previous attempts to report on this had no data.
Right.
We had real data.
We crunched the numbers.
We used the law to get at. Mm-hmm. They forced using access to information, this trove of 5 years of raw theft data that we actually took the time to crunch through and find out. And so we didn't need the police or the LCBO to tell us. The data itself told us what the numbers were. And I believe that that is beginning to force at least some degree of response because of we now know that at least 3 Toronto police divisions have investigations underway. I don't know if you've seen any.
I saw some stuff. There was 2 arrests.
This past weekend.
And when this interview is, it's, you know, it's like February 10th, 11-ish when this one's going to be released. But yeah, I saw at the beginning of February, late January, that there was two arrests.
Right. So there's definitely an increase in police activity. We believe there's an increase in paid duty placement of police on at certain LCBOs. Mm-hmm. Wait, our understanding prior to this run of stories is that the top five targets of theft in the grouping of LCBOs would get this kind of extra response.
Where geographically, I was wondering what the profile, and three profiles I'm curious about. Is there a demographic for the crimes being committed? Geographically, what the locations are, and is there any similarity in the product that's being stolen? So first, the perpetrators. You said it was 20 and young and skinny. I don't know if there's been a bigger sketch.
And here, let me say that there's sort of a pyramid of theft,
yeah.
if you will.
Okay.
And within that pyramid of humanity committing these crimes is the entire strata, the entire...
Okay. Yeah.
And so to illustrate the story, the first story, we used a lot of Crime Stoppers screen grabs of security that were distributed by police
yeah.
around Ontario. We were really careful because we don't want to be seen to be victimizing people with just a boatload of problems pre-existing. And make no mistake, there is a strata of LCBO theft that is primarily about feeding addiction issues.
Yep.
So you're talking about one alcoholic man who goes in and grabs the same bottle every day from the same shelf and walks out and might even smile and say thank you without paying to the clerk.
Yeah.
You will have definite drug addiction issues, meth addiction issues. We even asked the LCBO if the fentanyl crisis mm-hmm. is a contributing factor, because thieves will go in, take a duffel bag full of vodka or whatever the product might be, sell it at 50 cents on the dollar to a variety of places that they might do that, and get enough cash to feed their drug habit.
Right.
And so we're finding examples of people who've been arrested tens, twenties, even 100 times for theft that would fall into that category of addiction. Now, having said all that, and we don't want to parade their pictures on the front page of our newspaper, we were much more interested in the organized theft rings that we're starting to see.
Right.
So police in 14 division, which goes from Dovercourt down to Parkdale, on the west side of downtown, and cuts through an entire strata of income and ethnicities, and it's a very diverse stretch. But there are five LCBOs within their patch, and the community policing division there is the only sign within Toronto Police of a group that are actually taking a proactive effort at dealing with this, and they're in the process of arresting what they believe is a ring of 12 thieves that
really?
Are working in coordination.
So that's something that's
this is
that's
theft for profit. This is to resell because yeah. it's an easy score. But at the very top of that pyramid, you have organized rings that we understand what's happening is that they have scouts who are surveying the location. They're looking for cracks in the armor. They want to see when the security guards leave on their shift, but the store is still open, or the paid duty cop leaves after he's been there. And then they contact their colleagues and say, now, come.
Really?
And so, yeah. It's
and you were just saying that they're close to cracking down on one ring of this?
There's more than one ring that the police are on the heels of, mm-hmm. And they're in the two arrests that were announced on Saturday were part of a ring that they believe maybe is responsible for as much as 50 thefts. You know, and this is the large format duffel bag size
yeah.
heists, right?
Yeah, stuff when your kid goes to hockey yeah. practice, the big bag.
Yeah, so this entire strata. So I can't say there's any one profile. There's more yeah. than one kind of theft, but this going into the back rooms and grabbing caseloads en masse.
That feels organized.
It's been described to us as theft to order. So whoever's buying it at the other end is saying, I really need Hennessy. I need VSOP. I need, you know, this is what will move for me well.
Is there any wine? Because at the very least, I feel I'm going to have at least 30 seconds of wine talk. And by the way, I don't care if we don't have any, because the title of this podcast has the word interesting, and this is all really fascinating stuff. Is there any wine, or is it just, you know, for bang for your buck, it's easier to locate the giant thing of Ketel One vodka versus... You know, if you're going to steal the wine, you've got to make sure. Don't go near the Spanish blend. That's only $12. go find the Bordeaux. And oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that Grand Cru Riesling from Alsace, yeah, that's $118,
yeah,
which requires a little bit more planning.
I think it's almost antithetical to the kind of thieves that to have that level of awareness. Mm-hmm. But if that Grand Cru is something that is brought to the attention of these more organized thieves, that we would pay premium dollar if you can get X, Y, and Z.
I want to know, who are the shadowy people telling them to go steal that?
That's the next installment of our series, and it's the hardest part that we've been able to chase down, where, you know, we've held off for several weeks now reporting more on this story because there are police investigations that are at sensitive levels. And the last thing we want to do is jeopardize,
of course,
by over-reporting what we're learning. So
I'm more fascinated in, is there any in the who is the ordering versus the who is the stealing? Because just on that hierarchy, you mentioned the pyramid.
Right.
I want to know who's at the top.
Well, and so even when it gets to the fencing dimension, like there's the thieves, and then there are, you know, those who are buying and reselling, right? So who are those people? There's even a kind of pyramid of that too. Mm. We're hearing about bars and restaurants that are buying it in through the back door.
Really?
Because they can sell it per shot.
Yeah.
And because it's off the books, it probably won't mess with the LCBO, because the Gaming and Liquor Commission now is actually looking at bar and restaurant receipts to see how it corresponds to their LCBO purchases to make sure it all adds up. But this would be off book products. So,
I never even thought about that. Yeah. For a restaurant, if you get a thing of vodka, that's normally $200 and you get it for $100, that $200 bottle of vodka represents $900 of profit. So you're, you know, immediately that's making your margins that much healthier.
Yeah. And if for anybody who knows anything about the hospitality industry in Toronto, the restaurant scene,
razor thin,
the margins that they fight through, you know, it's not shocking to think that somebody who's looking at the bubble of putting 20 people out of work because they are 5% short and the bank wants its loan. Not to make apologies, but I can see how a marketplace would exist in a strata of that.
Yeah.
But let me tell you about another side of the fencing.
Yeah.
We know that there's a character that sounds like he fell off the pages of a Charles Bukowski novel.
Oh, really?
He's in his 80s, and he circulates through the underground poker scene, the illegal underground poker games in Toronto, with a duffel bag selling stolen LCBO liquor to the customers at the games.
This is like the old, after hours clubs when they were dry.
Yeah.
And the woman would come and sell you Orange Crush and a thing of gin or something.
Maybe not that different from the smuggled cigarettes in the 1980s, the gym bag sold cartons in the bars in Toronto.
Some 80-year-old character at a barfly is going around to the poker scene selling
a
vodka.
A crime of opportunity for a little extra score. And he's selling it for 2/3 retail value. So one presumes he's paying 1/3 retail value to the actual thieves.
Yeah.
And we actually, through a source, we've seen photographs of this man, in action. So
I would love to see the profile story, the Toronto Star if this gentleman is ever caught. Geographically, is there certain areas like do you know, has the Summerhill one had this? Because the Summerhill or the Queen's Quay, the two big giant, you know, shining bastions of alcohol, have those gotten hit?
They've got hit. You know, famously on the Queen's Quay, I think there was a $26,000 bottle of scotch that was stolen some years back. Mm-hmm. But it is pretty regularly hit. What you will find with those premium stores is that they're also very well protected.
Yeah.
Compared to other LCBOs. So there are some East End LCBOs that are really badly hit. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most shocking facets of this story was that when you look at the actual raw numbers, and the data applies to Toronto, and this is kind of pissing off LCBO workers around the province, because they feel and see and are telling us it's just as bad here. It's just as bad in Kingston, mm-hmm. in Hamilton, in Ottawa. And yet we don't have data from every police force. We have the Toronto numbers. So all the LCBO has done is acknowledge that it's an urban problem.
Yeah.
So Ontario cities, the way the numbers show what's happened in Toronto, it's intense. But when you look at the individual outlets in Toronto, we see some really hard hit East End and West End outlets. Mm-hmm. There's one in the Coxwell area that has been intensely targeted by a group of thieves. More than one group, but one in particular has cleaned them out, and they even do distraction. So we've been told by one of our sources that the distraction is to kind of draw the security's attention over here.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And get them excited about some minor infraction in this direction while the team actually does the heavy cleaning to the other side. So, and this has happened in 2019. We're talking about thefts in recent weeks.
What do you think the LCBO is going to do?
Well, here's the agony of all of this is that, you know, and I have an issue with people who see this story through their ideology. And by that, I mean, none of the reporting that we did touched on public versus private, but a whole lot of the reaction made the gut assumption that if this were privately run, this would not be an issue. And you know what? We had people coming to us, talking to us about major big box retailers and how what the LCBO is doing is exactly what they do.
Yeah.
So Walmart, for example, we're told people are walking out of Walmart with duffel bags full of stuff. And what it appears now to be a corporate reality in the 21st century that it's cheaper, whatever their upfront cost for that stock is, 25 cents on the dollar of what retail is, certainly at the LCBO.
Cheaper to lose inventory than to have more security?
They don't look at it as a $70 bottle of vodka walking out the door. They think of it as a $19 bottle.
Right.
And, you know, the security for LCBO is supplied by a company called G-Force. And, you know, they contract per hour to the LCBO probably at close to twice what the actual security guard makes.
Yeah.
And so they look at, you know, security times that number of dollars per hour versus what rate per hour are we losing. And they do a triangulation, and one presumes they're not telling us. So I'm connecting the dots of what our sources within the LCBO are telling us. They're triangulating that they're making more money for Ontario taxpayers by letting people walk away with this stuff. And so that's interesting, right? So
that is, because when I hear this story about public versus private company, I never even thought about that. Now I get the idea of people being upset because, you know, taxpayer, you know, so I pay for LCBO, and if the LCBO is not doing their job, then, you know, there's that sense of ownership, I guess, but right. I look at the LCBO more as, I look at it just as a company. It is a building with product that is very valuable that people want. I almost don't treat it any different than I would the Apple store.
And I think in a whole range of ways, they do a superb job with what they're tasked with. I think in this one instance that, you know, the behavior that's being described to me is the kind of behavior managerially that one would associate with sort of the worst, barest bones private retailer, because they're willing to put their staff through a substantial amount of anxiety yep. while paying lip service to their fears to maximize profits. And that's, maybe there are a lot of listeners out there who go, damn right, that's the way it's supposed to be. But I wonder about social cohesion. I wonder about the fact that every time this happens, there's 20 or 30 Ontario taxpaying witnesses who have integrity, and they're standing there watching people basically reach into their wallet and pull out bills as they dutifully stand in line to pay their bills.
Yeah.
And personally, if you ask me, would I be comfortable with the LCBO turning over $1.95 billion in profit next year? Because they put a sufficient amount into securing their stores so that we're not paraded with duffel bags of theft happening instead of $2 billion, I would be comfortable with knowing that the people working at these stores feel safe going in because there's adequate security, and I don't ever have to see again what I saw of backpacks going out the door and the humiliation of the staff that comes with it, right?
Oh, absolutely. The humiliation, as you said, the quality of life that suffers. And at some point, just by math, if there are this amount going on, at some point something's going to go wrong and an LCBO employee is going to get severely wounded or maybe killed.
Well, and or a member of the public. I've got one story that happened just down the road here on Queen Street East in the Beaches.
Yeah.
There was, this is an eyewitness who tells us that there was a big football playing size guy in the lineup who watched these two guys walk out with IKEA bags filled with high-end product.
Yeah.
And he saw that the staff were going to do absolutely nothing. And he rolled his eyes and said, I've had enough of this. And he ran out after these guys, grabbed them.
Yeah.
There was some kind of confrontation on the street that involved a modest amount of violence, enough that these two thieves ran away and left the bag. So he walked triumphantly back into the LCBO with these two IKEA bags filled with product, returned it to him. And as they were processing the final seconds of this scene, these two thieves ran back in to a display case that was right by the door and grabbed something just out of I don't know what, sheer stubbornness that they weren't going to completely be cleaned out, and ran down the street. And so they got a modest secondary haul in the end.
But that is some hubris from those
right. So we've been thieves. Careful in our... So we've been hearing multiple stories like this. We know in Don Mills, there was a customer who told us about following the thieves with the duffel bag down two blocks, seeing the car that they put the bag into, writing down the license plate number, producing it to police. And never being called as a witness, never hearing anything more about it. But then after our first series of stories, they reached out to confirm. We had dozens and dozens of accounts from the public in addition. And that's what I think. I think somebody is going to play vigilante just the way it, for a nanosecond, flashed through my mind. Maybe I should intervene, you know? Is it being a good citizen to stand up? The LCBO is terrified that that's going to happen. For the same reason they're letting it walk out the door, they're worried about legal liability.
Yep.
The police don't want that to happen. We as a news organization, the Toronto Star, doesn't want customers jumping into the fray. But I think with the frequency that's this happening, if nothing else changes, I think there's a chance somebody, a worker or a customer, is going to get hurt.
Here's the thing. I often joke that if the LCBO changed their logo to someone punching a puppy violently in the face, it would have zero impact on sales. You're selling alcohol. That's easy to sell. Mm-hmm. You've got a monopoly on it. If the worst case scenario happens, let's say in the span of 2 weeks, an employee and someone inside the LCBO, just a customer, both die. That's not going to hurt sales at all. It might drop it for a couple weeks, but then there's a birthday, an anniversary, a New Year's. I mean, the LCBO, in some ways, what do they really have? I mean, beyond the morality and social, like just the cost of, you know, just your own individual consciousness, I wonder, what fear does the LCBO really have?
Well, I think, you know, and I think this is true. We haven't mentioned anywhere in here that there's a large portion of the LCBO staff have union representation through OPSU, right?
Yeah.
So my understanding is although there's an intersection of management through health and safety consultation, this has been an ongoing issue. There's terrible distrust between management and staff at the LCBO. Terrible, terrible distrust.
Yeah.
And the rank and file frontline workers feel that the only way anything's going to change is if one of them gets badly hurt, because some of them have been hurt. There have been hospitalizations. To my knowledge, there's been no fatality, and I don't think that's news that they could keep a lid on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, you know, you're right. If there is a fatality after this problem has been exposed, and the extent and
this isn't like with the K car. Remember those little K cars, and they you'd hit the back of one lightly, and then this from the 70s. Anyone under 40, Google this. And it would blow up. Well, the car company went under because that was a case where they don't have a monopoly. There's other cars out to get there. And then I was just thinking about when you're giving the last answer, and I feel bad because, yeah, there is a lot of good that the LCBO does, and in terms of, you know, money that it brings in. And I got friends who, this woman, Carrie Mortimer, who works at the LCBO, and she was a guest on this, and she's fantastic. And there's a lot of really good, smart, bright people that work there. So, yeah, you do get worried. Where do you think this is? Where do you think this story advances in the next couple months?
I mean, we want to tell more about where this product goes.
Yeah,
we want to know.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
Whether
how much goes to restaurants or it's, organized crime.
It's really interesting to me that the Alcohol and Gaming Commission, which is really concerned, as you would expect, about bars and restaurants serving underage,
yeah,
doesn't seem to have this on their radar, and so. You know, we're talking about volumes of product here. You know, so I think on the purchase end, on the fencing end, I think that there could be some court cases that are going to get very interesting. The thing about, you know, from the LCBO's point of view, when they do the follow through, what the police want to see is a strong commitment from the retailer that they're going to collaborate with the police to get an actual prosecution, and that there will be consequences. So that means they have to take staff time to retrieve that video of the suspects. They have to transfer that video to something that can be seen in court. The way, you know, the courts work, they need the employee that transferred that video to sit in court and say, yes, this is the surveillance video. I transferred it on this tape. This is not fake audio, video. This is the real thing. And so you're talking about resources again, that I think in the calculation of LCBO management, how much do they want to put into that? Now, I'm hearing from store workers that there are many thefts they don't even report because there's paperwork to be done.
Yeah.
They've got to actually process it. But if they've got a lineup of customers at the till, it doesn't happen. And if that lineup continues till they're off shift, they're not authorized to administer themselves overtime pay,
right,
to do the reporting. And they kind of shrug and then next day on, right? Start over the next day.
Last question for you. We've gone about 42 minutes. This has been really interesting. I appreciate, Mitch, you doing this. There's another thing we got to start throwing in the equation in terms of the sale of products that, you know, can cause an... I'm trying to think of when... I'm now blanking. This is just a very simple term. To get altered. Alcohol is a great thing to get a slight alter, to get a slight buzz. Well, now cannabis is going to be... you know, entering the equation, maybe at LCBOs or corner stores or things like that, and not just about getting it online. How do you think that plays into this story?
Well, cannabis retail was meant to be you know, run like the LCBO under the Wynn government. The Ford government said, nah, when it comes to retail, that's going to be private. So they've had this lottery, and it was just 10 days ago that the unsuspecting winners, names were drawn. And
were they all in the Rexdale area?
Interesting. I have a colleague at work who's been covering the story closely, Joe Hall, and he told me that some of them just threw their hat in the ring without any knowledge or expectation. They're not equipped to actually run any kind of cannabis operation. So they'll be partnering or selling to one of the big market capitalized, the runaway stocks that have quadrupled in this pot rush that we've seen on Bay Street. So that's the first stores will open in April.
Security for that if people are...
So how much product would they keep on site? We've already seen evidence of the licensed producers, the companies that are authorized to actually grow the product that gets sold at these stores. There have been thefts. There have been break-ins. They've had product stolen. They've had cash stolen in Ontario. Mm-hmm. One, I think, was near Keswick, maybe November or something like that. So I'm curious to see the layout of those stores, what kind of... Because that's the thing. You think about an LCBO. You know, I grew up in Toronto, and I remember, you know, probably 5 years old, holding my dad's hand as he went into this institutional, almost prison like, you know, and a window filled out a
fill
form,
out, fill a form like you're like
applying for a passport or something.
And
the bag was handed over to you. And there have been people that said to us, you know, that now these beautiful boutiques, the LCBOs, you know, they have very competent marketing teams who've who've designed very, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of impulse buy. I know often I'll walk out of the LCBO with more than I intended to go in.
It's been known to happen.
And so, you know, some people have said maybe a synthesis of then versus now with high technology. So you have that virtual shopping experience, an exquisite, easy to navigate website that has everything in front of your eyes that can work on mobile. You make your purchases electronically, then you go to the location, which is a far more secure location, and your product is waiting for you as you arrive. And that way it reduces maybe 80% of the access to expensive, you know, it's keep the low hanging fruit, not hanging quite so low, seems to me
good way
to be a really good start.
And you're never going to have 100%. Ain't nothing going to be 100% safe. And you know, there's always going to be crime. Whenever there's money, there's going to be crime. I especially on weekends, I always buy newspapers, and I buy all of them. I'll buy the Toronto Sun, and I'll put it next to the Star. I'll get the Globe. I'll get the National Post. You know, I'm 43. I'm a big fan of newspapers. I hate the idea of seeing them been reduced. And hell, that's always a story about death of print, which I think, again, hyperbolic. But you know, I saw the commercial for the Washington Post in the Super Bowl that was voiced by Tom Hanks. Why don't you just tell listeners why every now and then it's good to go to the corner store and pick up a paper?
Well, thanks for that. I mean, it's in my blood to literally would bleed ink. I've done it almost 40 years. I love print. But I would like people to think of news organizations as news organizations, right? And and so we are a living, breathing, thriving news organization. Most of the people who've seen our LCBO work have seen it online.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. For a long time, people thought clicks would pay the bills, right?
Yeah.
Now we're learning clicks won't pay. So it's not old media versus new media. It's not MSM versus the great digital future. Last week, BuzzFeed laid off a whole bunch of people.
Yep.
You're seeing these cyber-only entities failing because clicks don't pay the bills.
Yeah.
And so...
You got to pay.
Right. People are moving to a subscription model.
By the way, The Athletic, which is a sports one, which has seen a lot of great sports writers from the Post, from the Star.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Kreen, Sean Fitzgerald, you know, who work for The Athletic Toronto. How hard is it to change our patterns And you know, you see with a star, you can only click on so many stories per month. And how do you just communicate to the public? Listen, good journalism is not free. You it's like anything else. You pay for coffee, you should pay for news.
Well, here's the thing. When we cease to exist, there's no one else with a data team that's going to use access to information laws to get that raw police data and to find out what the LC bill will not tell us and what the police themselves will not tell us and take the time and energy to dig down into it. So we, you know, it costs money to do that. It's salaried time. It's time consuming. What I've seen within the Toronto Star, because I've worked for the place for 30 years, I've reported from 30 different countries for the Toronto Star. I've literally dodged bullets for the place in Afghanistan, in the West Bank, in Gaza, in Libya, in Eastern Ukraine, in Crimea. And what I see, I believe in it. I believe in news. And I'm terrified of the fake news assignations that are sort of buffeting our industry from both directions. Because as we struggle as journalists, and it's my religion, I believe in journalism. I really do believe that there is an objective, factual truth that can be found. We're under attack. So, yeah, if you can buy a paper, God bless you, do it. If anybody can subscribe, I'm not saying you must subscribe to the Star. Buy into somebody. Buy into the Globe and Mail. Subscribe to the West End Phoenix, which is this great little paper that the musician and writer Dave Bedini, my old buddy, has started up. Just clicks are not going to pay for it. If you want this kind of information, if you want the kind of investigative teams that now exist at the Star and at the Globe and Mail in serious ways, although our overall staff has shrunk, there's a recalibration toward breaking stories that no one else has. So we're not throwing up the next, British Royals story that is available to you on 4,000 websites.
What's going on
there? This is enterprise journalism, investigative journalism that no one else is looking into. And I think that's the best way we use our resources, is to spread out. Don't move in packs. Don't all cover the same blip until everybody's seen it everywhere. Do your own original work. And so I hope people will pay for it. They may not, but we'll go down fighting the good fight if that's how it ends. So,
what's your favorite bottle of wine?
And
by the way, I mean, you know, I was being a little facetious. We haven't done any wine talk, but everything you said there was brilliant. Like incredibly well said, just for a very important cause. You need journalism. I get why there's some antagonism towards media on the left and the right, and whatever antagonism you have, it still is needed. It's not a necessary evil. It is a necessary institution just for our society.
Thanks. Yeah. I would say this. I can tell you my least favorite bottle of wine.
Do it.
when I was based in Jerusalem and covering the second Palestinian Intifada, it was on a hilltop hotel on overlooking the Valley of Kidron, and it was the only thing on the menu, and we ordered it up, and it tasted like it had been boiled multiple times before.
Boiled Welch's grape juice.
The cool thing about being based in Jerusalem is that you're about a 2.25-hour flight from Provence, Tuscany,
Piemonte.
So, when we came back from any little getaway like that, our bags were full of the finest wines we could acquire, and fortified our existence in Jerusalem and braced to put on the flak jacket the next day.
Jesus. Hey, Mitch, thank you so much for being part of this podcast. It's a different one. It doesn't really deal with wine, but it's, an offshoot, but it deals with a really important issue and a very newsy issue that's going on, not just in Toronto, but in Ontario. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Audioboom, and whatever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.